WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Farah Balasilla with the WSLR News headlines for Thursday, March 20th. Bill Evers, the former mayor of Bradenton who served 20 years in this role, passed away at age 90 in his home in Parrish on Friday, March 14th. He was an Army veteran, police chief, and advocate for nonprofits. During his year as mayor from 1980 to 2000, he kept taxes low, led efforts to rehabilitate the city, and advocated for local nonprofit efforts. He played a key role in having the city's own billion-gallon drinking water supply system built. He was a member of many organizations. A bill proposed by a state senator from Miami that responds to the concerns about so-called chemtrails cleared a Senate committee. According to the debunked chemtrails conspiracy theory, the government and other entities are spreading toxic chemicals through the contrails of water vapors left behind airplanes. Senator Ileana Garcia's bill aims to create a hotline to track chemtrail concerns and prohibit geoengineering and weather modification activities. A lengthy planning board meeting last week discussing the Miramar condo tower project in downtown Sarasota spilled over into a second meeting scheduled for April 9th. The developer of the Miramar proposes to restore the historic two-story building facing Palm Avenue, but only if the city allows them to build two 18-story towers on the land in an area where zoning regulations allow just 10 floors. During the meeting, Seward Development said they would build a rather unsightly 10-floor apartment quote cube if the city does not allow them to go 18 floors high. Under the cube version, they would only maintain, not rehab, the historic Miramar building. Residents fear the two 18-floor structures would entirely block their ocean views. The astronauts on the Starliner Crew 9 mission have finally made it back. After landing off of Florida's Gulf Coast near Tallahassee in their parachuted Dragon capsule, a pod of dolphins greeted the astronauts as rescue vessels led efforts to retrieve them. NASA recommends durations of up to 6 months maximum in space. However, the astronauts' 8-day trip was extended to 9 months. Thanks in part to the successful space rescue, NASA will now contract the Elon Musk-controlled SpaceX for future space travel. This has been Farah Vallecillo with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, March 20th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is Rob Grant.
Hello, Kathy. Nice to see you.
Rob is coming off of a bit of a bug, so yeah. I know your voice is a little scratchy.
But I'll make it through. We'll
yeah,
be all right.
But you're a trooper. You came, you showed up, and I so appreciate it. Rob, you ran for city commission, and you know, tell us about your work in the community, because you do work in the arts world in Sarasota.
Yeah, so I actually have spent the last 10 years as the finance manager for a theater troupe here in town.
West Coast Black Theater Troupe.
That's right. Yeah. And we've seen amazing growth since I've been lucky enough to be involved. Mm-hmm. It's a very special place, and I'm very lucky to be a part of it. And we've been through a capital campaign, and you know, a $10 million capital campaign to expand our campus, build, you know, a beautiful theater and an administration and multi-purpose building. Mm-hmm. And so I have a little bit of insight into the performing arts space here in Sarasota because I live it every day.
That is your work. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But of course, I'm here just for myself, speaking for myself.
Right. You're speaking for yourself.
You know, but that is my life experience here
and,
in town.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful you're here. I appreciate what it takes to run for office. I did it once back in 2010. And we are going to be talking Monday, the 17th. A belated happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there. I hope you all had fun. But on St. Patrick's Day, this past Monday, the City Commission met, and the agenda included the Sarasota Performing Arts Foundation's proposal for a new performing arts hall, the implementation agreement, which is the next step in the process toward a new performing arts hall, was being discussed. And so we're going to break down, you know, there's a lot of concern out there.
There's a lot of concern. And most of it really doesn't have anything to do with the arts per se.
No.
It has to do with, can we afford this?
Right. I mean,
well, not we. Can the city and the city's budget, you know,
this
include
on.
This
right.
along with everything else that goes on in a city?
Yeah. So, you know, I think Commissioner Kathy Kelly Ulrich summed it up nicely during her questions about the project. She said, you know, I'm not hearing people say, don't do this.
Right.
You know, they're saying, be careful.
That's right.
Be aware. This is big.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a taxpayer initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you live in the city, you own property in the city, you work in the city, you spend time here,
mm-hmm.
the money that you pay in taxes, that's what's supposed to support this.
So let's hold on.
Sure.
And before we, because I know there'd be people listening saying, that's not true, because tax increment financing mm-hmm. is what is slated to fund this initiative. So just to give you some top line numbers, and I'm going to come back to these again. There are all these numbers being tossed around. Hard cost, which is the cost of the building and labor,
mm-hmm.
that's $250 million. Well, that's kind of a meaningless number because it's never just about the labor and the building. The total project cost, which includes like services and furniture and, you know, decorating the place, all these other costs, the cost there is actually $365 million. But, you know, that's kind of a meaningless number, too, because this is happening over time. It's not going to be built in a month, right? So you've got to work inflation in there. So the cost for the project with inflation, 5 years inflation. So this assumes we're breaking down, we're breaking ground today, which we aren't,
mm-hmm.
okay? 4 years of inflation, it's an extra $5 million every 6 months.
Right.
And that puts the cost, if it were to get built this year, which it won't, that number is $407 million.
And there's still some things that aren't even included in that.
Parking. The parking, which is on the city, is, again, that's maybe $50 million. However, you also have to put in the escalators of inflation.
Right.
So the real working number that I see for the cost of just the hall, not the parking, is $407 million.
Right.
Because that includes inflation. And that is not the number you will hear people. They go with these other numbers. But, you know, we got to be real, right? We got to be real.
If you're going to spend it, it should be included.
Yeah, you have to.
I mean, it's that simple.
Especially when you're financing it for 25 years, you have to include that.
That 25 years of financing adds up to another $160 million.
Okay, so hang on, because you're getting ahead of me.
Sorry. Sorry, no problem.
I get
excited.
Okay, I know. So we're going to make this, we're going to walk everyone through it because this is important stuff. What is tax increment financing? So TIF dollars. So the word increment's important there. And I'll get to why. But, you know, increments are additions over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what incremental growth is, additional growth every year over time. So tax increment financing has been used very successfully. It can work very well
mm-hmm.
as a tool to improve areas, to add more value, recreation, housing, enjoyment to a city or a town, wherever. Pittsburgh developed their waterfront with tax increments financing. So in and of itself, it can work really well. Mm-hmm. What they do is they designate an area. It might be one city block. It might be five city blocks. But there's an area where the properties in that area that will benefit from the adjacent development, right? Mm-hmm. They are designated as to be part of the TIF district.
Right.
So in this scenario, the TIF district includes the existing condominiums across the street and south of the Van Wezel and north of the Van Wezel. So we're talking the Quay buildings. Mm-hmm. Some of them are built. Some of them are underway. Then there's potential future buildings. Maybe.
It right? also includes a large part of the Rosemary District, which I'm not sure if people are fully aware of how large this particular TIF district is. It's the Quay, basically. It's the condos across the street. And then it goes deep into the Rosemary District. And in fact, all the way on 10th Way, it goes
10th Street?
All the way to Gillespie Park. No, 10th. Yes, 10th Street.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Okay.
10th Street. It actually has a little sliver that goes all the way to Gillespie Park.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some neighborhoods involved in this as well, you know, whose taxes are a part of this as well.
Yeah. Now, and what they will say, and this is true, is that does this raise that, and we're talking property taxes. So here's the idea. With a TIF district, you take a baseline year, and I believe it's like 2024.
It was 2019 for this TIF district.
Okay.
Yep.
So 2019. So you take the appraised values of all the property in this area at 2019, and that's your baseline. And then every additional year, there's an increase in appraised value, and then the accompanying increase in tax goes into the TIF money bucket.
That's right.
And when you get your tax bill, you know, people who live in the city know part of my money goes to the county and part of it goes to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So both the city and the county are participating in this TIF district.
Right.
So if you have a property that's worth $400,000 and in 2019, and then the next year, and this is appraised value, it's appraised at $400,000. The next year, it's appraised at $425,000. The money, the tax money that's collected on that additional $25,000 in appraised value goes into the TIF bucket.
Right.
And then the next year, maybe it's $435,000. So that $35,000, you know, that generates tax revenue, that tax revenue goes into the TIF bucket. And on for the life of the bond or the project, whatever the deadline is, right? So the projection that, you know, right off the bat, Robin, I want to get your, you know, looking at this meeting, the projection for the TIF dollars, the tax increment financing. So you've got the county bucket and you've got the city bucket.
They split it. That's right.
Well, and it's not a 50-50 split, but the county, the projection that the Performing Arts Foundation is forecasting for the total amount of TIF dollars is $775 million, which is way more.
Over 30 years. Yep.
Okay. And then if you look at the city finance director, Kelly Strickland, and the county's projection, it's attributed to both of them in the presentation. The city's piece she's projecting is $146 million.
That's right.
The city's piece that the foundation is projecting is $431 million, okay? That is a difference of $285 million in TIF dollars.
That's right.
So you've got, you've got an economic impact advisor, and I'm going to get to that, the quality of that information. Mr. Stokes, Alex Stokes, seems like a very nice guy. Everybody's nice. I would say everybody's a nice guy. He's at the table telling the city commission that they're going to see an increase in TIF dollars overall for the county and the city of $775 million. And then that the city's portion of that in projected TIF is $431 million. And then you got the city finance director saying it's $146 million. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a foundation with a vested interest in telling you there's going to be a ton of money for what they want to build, adding $285 million to the projection for this TIF money, which is going to pay, is slated to pay for a bond to fund this facility. So that's kind of the landscape. Mm-hmm. Take it, Rob. What do you think of
this? Well, you know, the biggest problem is the estimate that they're making with this TIF. Originally, you know, earlier this year, CCNA, the Coalition of City Neighborhoods, hosted the performing arts folks to come and make a presentation. And they, at that presentation, presented an estimate of, I believe it was $375 million for the TIF.
Total with the city and the county.
City and county, right. So, at that time, the project was still underfunded by, I think it was $150 to $200 million. Underfunded at a $375 million TIF projection.
For, city
within
dollars.
About 10 to 14 days, the performing arts folks miraculously came up with a new estimate to the TIF of $775 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I live and work in the finance world, and a lot of us that do that had a really hard time understanding where this number came from. Mm-hmm. I mean, it literally seemed like it was just picked out of the air. Mm-hmm. Well, how much do we need to balance this proposal and make it pay for itself? Well, we'll put $775 and we'll fill in the blanks of how we got there later. And that's how a lot of us saw what was going on. I mean, you know, it's almost like going to the bank and saying, well, this is what my paycheck is every year, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get raises going forward. Trust me. I promise I'm going to get raises. Yeah. So let's use what I'm telling you I'm going to earn in the future. And that's not really generally how things work. I mean, if I go to a bank, they won't accept that. And like you said, this $775 million projection is from a consultant. Mm-hmm. It has not been vetted and approved by the city's finance department. The county has, I don't believe, commented on that projection. And the performing arts folks have assured us that they have the backup. They've done a hard, deep dig and analysis, but they haven't shared that analysis with anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The best explanation that we got was that, we see $12 million from this building. We see $12 million from this building per year. And they basically went around and looked over the area and said, we count this many buildings and we'll multiply it by this much money. And so there you go.
Meaning they were, okay, so because...
Sort of, you know, on a napkin. I mean, really.
Well, Liz Alpert, Commissioner, Mayor Alpert, asked Mr. Stokes, who is the consultant, if he could explain how they got that $775 million figure. And I'm pulling the video. I will put it up on my YouTube channel for people to look at. It was extremely concerning to me because he talked a lot and said what I consider to be very little.
Right.
He was basically saying we use current conditions, today's conditions, which have been very relatively favorable in the recent past.
That's right.
For real estate.
Yep.
And he talked about a 16% appreciation in the real estate market, which, and he used very honestly blathery language in my book when it comes to economic projections. 16% appreciation in the market place. We're assuming that the current conditions will be, you know, continue basically. And I'm thinking, there's no real estate market that has a sustained rate of growth of 16% a year for 30 years. That's crazy.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. If you've lived in Sarasota, you know that we live a roller coaster here.
Yeah. And Jen Ahern Koch, Commissioner Ahern Koch, asked specifically, your projections go in one direction. They go up. And to your point, we know we experience downturns. How come you didn't build any downturns in there? Well, you know, honestly, there's a talent sometimes I see in politics where people will talk, but they're really not answering the question. He acknowledged that, yes, there will be downturns. It will be a bumpier ride than this. But I think it would be fair to say he was expressing that overall he believed that this was, you know, an average that was reasonable. The other thing is he said that, and this is where it gets really dicey, and it's just restating what you said, that they're looking at existing buildings, but they're looking at buildings under construction, but then they're also looking at planned buildings, things that aren't approved. There's no spade in the ground. There's there's nothing like that. So, you know, I was just sitting there going, how there's actually no tangible evidence he's offering.
That's right.
And really nothing, except I think this is right. There was no list of here's the existing buildings, here's the ones that are being built, here's the potential ones. So you could look and you could actually vet whether or not his projection made any sense at all. Nothing like that.
Nothing. Nope. Not a spreadsheet. No. Graph. No, nothing.
Well, there's just a graph.
With a bunch of lines that go basically straight up.
The endless sunshine of, of you know, 16% real estate growth. So I'm just going to do a little rant right now about these consultants that do economic impact.
I totally understand. Okay. I'm right there with you.
Because I started doing this work back with spring training. And there are economists all over who totally rebuff the idea that building a stadium brings you economic impact, you know, a net gain that justifies all the public costs.
Right.
And it's all about the net, people. You know, that's the thing. It's not about saying, oh, well, we'll bring this much revenue, because these venues don't happen in a vacuum. They are competing with other entertainment venues. You know, are you going to go to a spring training game, or are you going to go to the bowling alley? I mean, it's is it true that it can attract visitors? Sure. But is it attracting so many visitors that it offsets any negative impacts to surrounding venues?
Right.
No, they don't even go there. They don't even look at that. So what I typically find, Donna Ardoin, she's part of the Laffer organization, Arthur Laffer, the Laffer curve, supply side economics, which has led to exploding deficits in the United States because the promised tax cuts lead to exploding deficits. They don't actually balance the budget. And they don't, you know, the money that is not coming in theoretically is supposed to be reinvested in companies. But we see, and we've seen in the recent past, companies buy back their stock.
Right.
The rich people hang on to
their
money.
Put it in the bank. Yep.
Yeah. It's not like they're, oh gosh, I've got to get busy. Maybe they just want to go down to, you know, Turks and Caicos and hang out. I mean, that's the reality. So that's why we get exploding deficits with this ridiculous theory. 40 years. I mean, I was in college studying economics. I voted for Reagan. I know this doesn't work, right?
No, it doesn't
work.
No, it doesn't.
So Donna Ardoin, who's from that school, right, with Arthur Laffer, who, if you ever listen to the guy, is a fabulous salesman. I mean, all these people are just endless sunshine. It's all going to be great. And there is some value to that, right? A positive attitude.
Oh, absolutely.
But it doesn't make up for, you know, you have to look at reality. Donna Ardoin projected $204 million of economic impact from the rolling facility, which is crazy. If that were actually happening, mm-hmm. we would be rolling in money. We would not have infrastructure issues because mm-hmm. the county would have all the money it needed to fund capital projects.
That's right.
So these projections have a history of being garbage.
Well, they're not independent, like you said.
No,
they're not. These folks are being hired to sell a project. That's their goal. If they don't succeed, they haven't earned their fee.
Yeah. And none of this means none of this, what we're saying, means there can't be or shouldn't be some new performing arts hall. That's not what I'm saying.
Correct.
But if you're going to do it, you better be straight about the money.
This is public money. It's a civic project.
So the other piece is, I have never seen, and maybe I just missed it, but I've never seen a municipality surrender the projection of their TIF money to a consultant. I've never seen a municipality ignore their city finance director. Right. She was the softest voice in the room, but the one who knows the most, frankly. And Kelly Strickland should be listened to way more than Mr. Stokes, who's being paid by a foundation to say everything's going to be fine.
You better believe it. I mean, you know, I know that the city's finance department had had participated and had input on the slide, the primary slide that showed, you know, the city's part of the funding, the city's part of the expense, the deficit in funding.
Yes.
Some ways they could make up for a part of it. And the city had a part in that slide. But they didn't have a part in the slide showing that the $775 million TIF projection.
The
city's finance department is not standing behind that.
No.
I've communicated with the city's finance department. That is not their slide. They will not put their stamp on it.
Of course.
And what's amazing is that the slides are presented as if it's a unified presentation.
Yes.
But it's cut and paste. It is not a unified presentation.
No.
And when Ms. Strickland appeared on Monday, you could hear concern in her voice about these deficits, because if there is any deficit in funding, it will come out of the city's general fund.
No, well, it will come out of, so that was very important. Like, I want to know why Kelly Strickland didn't get to give her own entirely different, presentation. But hang on a minute.
Sure, sure.
So Kelly Strickland sounded, well, she was just asked the question by one of the commissioners to speak to the bond and the TIF and the difference, right? And she told how they came up with the city's TIF numbers. Mm-hmm. But what she also said, to build on your point about what if there's a shortfall, because we're in uncertain economic times.
That's
right. And the only thing we know for sure in the next 30 years is that there will be ups and downs, because there always are. And Ms. Strickland said, if the TIF dollars don't cover, right? And so I'm going to repeat again, city finance and the county are projecting that the TIF money for the city is going to be $146 million.
Mm-hmm.
The foundation is projecting it's going to be $431 million. And that's a difference of $285 million.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. So Kelly Strickland said, if the TIF money doesn't cover the bond, right, then it cannot come from ad valorem taxes, which is your property tax, right? But it will come from non-ad valorem taxes. And what are these? Sales taxes, franchise fees from like FPL for the right-of-way, right? Different revenues. And she said utility fees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your water bill, stuff like that. So if, and the city will have to pay that bond.
Right.
So if the money isn't there, those fees and taxes are going to go up.
That's right.
So when people say, oh, this won't raise your taxes, you got to question it. And there was no follow-up. She said that. Other services will be cut. Mm-hmm. Then the architect chimed in because The cost overruns for this architect for the hall they built in LA were 24%.
Wow. So I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So that $407 million, and you have to, which goes up $5 million every 6 months for just inflation, you have to know that this cost overrun situation, 10% you're lucky, right?
Yep.
I mean, a 10%, and that would be $40 million, mm-hmm. right? If it's 24%, you're looking at like $100 million, mm-hmm. right? For a $407 million project. So I don't see a real robust conversation happening about money. It's beginning, maybe, but Kelly Strickland, the city finance director, her projections versus the SPAF consultant, Mr. Stokes, wildly different. And Mr. Stokes, okay, getting back to the Donna Ardoin and the whole economic impact consultant mm-hmm. game. So when you look at their education, Mr. Stokes, they're not economists at all, not even close. So he has a BA in history, so do I. And he has a master's in real estate management. I manage real estate, like in the real world. So Donna Ardoin, same kind of background. Like there's not a hardcore economic background in there that would justify putting so much faith in these mm-hmm. projections.
Right.
And it's really critical that we know what's going to happen.
Well, and the consultants are only looking at this from one perspective. You know, and I think, you know, like I said, they're trying to sell this project and that it can be funded, whereas the city's finance director is looking at the city's budget and the city's financial position and potential financial position mm-hmm. in the big picture.
Right.
Because this project is not happening. It's not the only thing the city is working on right now.
No, and we have other bonds out there.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we mm-hmm. have a massive water main replacement, $400 million water main replacement project going on.
Yeah.
That's funded. Yay. That's great. But those are the other kinds of infrastructure projects and the cost that they are, that the city will face over the next 30 years.
Yeah.
So
especially all this weather,
right?
All the flooding.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a quick break
sure.
here and let everybody know that, of course, WSLR is a unique kind of radio. Each time you tune in to WSLR, you hear our community, our people, environment, music, and attitude. When you tune in, there's a freshness you'll not hear elsewhere. Thanks to the variety of voices and connections the station has with the community, the non-commercial nature of WSLR gives us independence, uncommon in media controlled by commercial or corporate interests. Help independent media be louder than ever by making a donation during our spring membership drive, which takes place Wednesday, April 2nd. Through Tuesday, April 8th. Donate online at WSLR.org or call us at 941-894-6469. WSLR in Fogartyville, stronger together, louder than ever. So we appreciate everyone who supports our station. If you're just joining us, I am here with Rob Grant. We are talking about plans for the proposal for the Sarasota Performing Arts Foundation new Performing Arts Center, and we've really just been talking about the finances. These things, the city finance director is projecting $146 million for this project in tax increment financing dollars, and we did explain what that is. It's mm-hmm. an incremental increase. There's a baseline appreciation value of a TIF district, the properties in a particular area. It's a defined district. And within that district, there's the project, which, you know, will appreciate, it will contribute to appreciation and a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. So you take, in this case, it's the 2019 mm-hmm. assessed values of the properties in around the surrounding Rosemary District and the Quay area near the Van Wezel. And then every single year, the appreciated value generates tax value. That appreciated tax value, the money that comes in for the extra $25,000 on your home, or $35,000, or, you know, over the years, $45,000. It all goes into a bucket. The city controls part of it. The county controls part of it. So,
and I think it's worth noting that, you know, we've already spent some of this money. That's
for the
other
park
thing, from the TIF. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, this TIF financing, that's what has gotten the Bay Park
right
through phase one. So we've already spent some of that money.
Yes.
And there's other phases of the Bay that some of this money will be spent on too. So they're not just going to – they're not planning on just using these TIF funds for the SPAC. They're also – this also has to build out rest of the
park,
Bay Park.
Which everybody wants.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
That is not
absolutely
controversial.
But it's free. Anybody can walk down to the Bay right now. And they can sit out on the lawn. They can enjoy the sunset and the view, and they can take in the fresh air. That won't be the case for a performing arts center. You will have to buy a ticket.
Yeah. So and they do philanthropic work,
of course,
and they do provide
sure
free
absolutely
tickets.
They
so
do.
You know, it is a well intended.
It has been
endeavor,
it has been a
for sure
net positive to the city so far, without a doubt. I mean, everybody loves it.
You mean, what are you talking
the
about?
The Bay.
Now?
The
oh,
Bay the, and the TIF
the
financing.
Park.
Right.
Yeah. The park. So, and the whole impetus was surface parking on the bayfront is not the highest and best use of land. Mm-hmm. So the parking lot for the Van Wezel is a surface parking lot with a waterfront view. And it'd be much better to have a park with a waterfront view.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
yeah. So in this $407 million building fund, it doesn't include parking.
Mm-hmm.
And that parking, there's a question of where will it go, because the whole point of this park is to get rid of the surface parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you build a garage nearby? Do you tuck it underneath? That's going to be expensive no matter which way you go. And that is also something the city is going to have to fund. And it is not part of that $407 million that
right
I'm talking about. The other piece is, Rob, the foundation hasn't raised the money. They haven't raised their part of the money.
No. And they say, you know, this is where things get a little dicey, because, you know, you can understand that someone would be hesitant to commit $1 million to something if there's not a true commitment from the city to do this.
But, which is what they say.
Which is what they say.
A reason why they right haven't raised. Since 2014, they've had to raise this money.
Right.
So 11 years.
But, you know, the thing is that the agreement as it's written is that the performing arts folks would have 90 days. If they had signed the implementation agreement on Monday, they would have another 90 days before they even had to present their fundraising plan. So they're saying, you know, have faith in us. Let's go ahead and move forward. And then after we start moving forward, in 3 months, we'll bring you a plan that says this is how we're going to raise the money.
Yeah.
You know, that's in the world that
it's
I've lived
backwards
in, it's completely backwards.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, from what I know about philanthropy, and I have served as the development director of a nonprofit, you know, overbuilding can get any nonprofit into deep trouble because they may not appreciate the operating and maintenance costs that
that's
it's
right
going to take to you know, have their shiny new building. But
well, look, you can have an operating plan, and after you build a facility,
mm-hmm,
I've found that it's going to take you about 5 years of operating it until you really understand what it costs to run that facility.
Mm-hmm. And the first 5 years, nothing's breaking.
That's right.
You know,
right.
So the maintenance costs are pretty low.
And you know, the SPAC,
that changes
as the
building ages.
As they're setting this agreement up, the SPAC wouldn't be responsible for a lot of those maintenance costs.
No, the city's responsible.
So
yeah,
you know, they can go run the theater and they can operate the theater and all. But if something breaks, they're going to go to the city and say, we need new windows.
Right.
And the city would have to pay for that.
Yeah. And so again, when you're looking at escalations over time, you have to consider that 8 or 10 years into the life of the building, the maintenance costs are going to increase
dramatically,
considerably.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can only plan so much. There's always unexpected.
Yeah. So what I know about philanthropy, which, you know, I know some because I did serve in this development position. You know some because you've been in a capital campaign for your organization, but also having talked to other people. I don't know that I buy this notion that philanthropists are only going to pledge once the city pledges. I actually think that to the extent that they're successful in claiming that that is a necessary precondition for them to fundraise,
right,
that the city commission's kind of being taken for a ride.
It puts a little doubt in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, don't tell me that no one is willing to pledge money. A pledge is a pledge.
That's right.
If the project
doesn't move forward, then you don't donate.
yeah. But people pledge money, understanding that other things are in flux. That's why it's a pledge.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that in 10 years you haven't, this is a $200 million at least nut that they need to crack.
Well,
right?
and they haven't even gotten
close to that.
Well, and that's,
in 10 years.
That's another part of, for me, the smoke and mirrors of the information. They are portraying this as a 50-50 project.
Right.
But it's not a 50-50 project. It's 50-50 to build the building.
That's the hard cost, right?
It's not. The project is, when I broke it down, it's really more like a 66% public dollars.
It's one-third.
And 33% of the Performing Arts Foundation.
That's right.
And that's the reality.
Stop saying 50-50.
Right.
One of the commissioners said, you know, people don't understand all these terms, what you're using. You're saying the total cost of the project is 50-50. There's a lot more expense, the parking, the maintenance,
right,
all this stuff.
Right.
And to your point, and I came to the same, you know, back of the envelope math, it is two-thirds city, one-third.
It is.
And that $407 million does include a parking lot.
Well,
or
that-
parking. So it's... it's very, and I say all this, as someone said to me, well, you've taken a position on the SPAF and you don't want, I'm like, that's not true.
No,
I actually haven't. I'm just very concerned
that
people are not getting a full story and there's been actually efforts to prevent good information from coming forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ron Cashton, who ran for city commission, wanted to present his financial picture. And this guy was an auditor for the Schubert Theater Group in New York City, one of the biggest performance venue operations in the country.
Yep.
And the Purple Ribbon Committee denied him the opportunity to share information. Who does that?
Right.
Why would you say no? Right. Hear what he has to say. He's a qualified expert, way more than Mr. Stokes.
That's right. I mean, look, you had Ron, I know, on your show.
Yes,
of course, I listened, and I've read his white paper, and he and I have had discussions and shared information. And based on his numbers, which I think are very reasonable, they have backup material. He's got worksheet after worksheet after worksheet that you can review.
Mm.
And I did some math, and you know, I had a guest column in the paper, and based on Ron's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So that the audience understands, like from a pragmatic viewpoint, in reality, if something were to happen and the city were to raise taxes based on Ron's projections, if you have a home that's valued at $500,000 today, it would be an additional $500 a year in property taxes to you.
Mm-hmm. But see, what they would say is that, no, your property taxes won't change. And what Kelly Strickland said at the meeting is this is going to come from revenues,
right,
non-ad valorem. I think, and there's no free lunch.
That's right. They'll have to make up for it somewhere. They either cut spending or they raise the revenue somewhere.
There's all these different buckets of money, but a bond, if you issue a bond, it has to get paid. We're actually funding two-thirds of the cost of this,
That's
not
right.
50%.
Right.
The foundation hasn't done significant fundraising to dent, like, if they had 50 million put away or pledged, mm-hmm. pledged, that'd make me feel better.
That's 25%. Like, that would be a pretty decent proportion. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we're not close to that. So.
Well, and about the debt cost, I think that's something that folks should understand as well, is that if this is a $407 million project, we're not going to have $407 million to pay for it in 4 years. So
right.
They're going to have to borrow some money to pay for this today.
We're going to have to issue a bond.
And over 30 years, mm-hmm. it's going to add $160 million to borrow that money. The Performing Arts Center is not paying those funds, that interest and that debt service.
Yes.
The taxpayers are literally pulling it out of their back pocket and paying it. So that really brings the total project cost from $407 million to $566 million.
Which their fancy projection doesn't cover.
So
the 431,
right.
I shouldn't say fancy. They're questionable. In my world, it's a questionable projection.
That's right.
Kelly Strickland is projecting $146 million. So you're saying the debt service, well, if $407 million is... the foundation would take a piece of that.
Yes.
So we're getting we're getting in the weeds a little bit.
Yep.
But suffice to say, we shouldn't be wondering
right.
how, and the city should not be having a consultant who is a very nice guy,
yeah.
but he's not backing up his data with anything real and that the public can see.
He doesn't represent the taxpayers' interests.
No, and Kelly Strickland does.
That's right.
And there's a $285 million gap
yeah.
between his projection and her projection. And anybody who lives in the city should be really concerned about that.
And why crazy. Aren't the commissioners pushing this?
I don't know.
I mean, why don't they just ask Ms. Strickland, do you think we can afford this?
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, that puts staff in a difficult position. I understand.
Oh, yes.
They don't like to answer questions, yes and no. In fact, they rarely do, and I get it. But at the end of the day,
that's
what the commissioners need to be good stewards of our dollars, and they need to be the ones asking those tough questions.
So let's shift over to the culture at City Hall. And there's a search now for a new city manager.
Mm-hmm.
And
is there? I'm not sure because I haven't seen any. I don't know. I haven't seen any news
about it.
Is that true?
Right. We're actually paying way more attention than most people because we do that. But if you were to go on the city's website, you would not know mm-mm. that there was a search for a new city manager.
No, you wouldn't.
And I've written an article on my Substack. If you Google Kathy with a C, Antunes, A-N-T-U-N-E-S, Substack, you'll find my Substack, and one of my recent articles is In Search of a City Manager. And there's a whole process that the International City County Managers Association, there's a protocol. Mm-hmm. Because ideally, a city or a county isn't having a high turnover rate with their administrator.
Right.
So these people hopefully stay for a while, 10 years, sometimes. Ken Thompson, it was 37 years mm-hmm. in the city of Sarasota. That's unusual. But 10 years is not unusual. So here we are, and the city is not following the ICMA industry standard protocol.
Right, best practices.
Right? Yeah, yep. They're not following best practices, which would mean that the city commission would talk about what they wanted in a search firm, and then they would gather up, you know, proposals from search firms, and they would interview the search firms, and they would choose one. Instead, the HR director chose for the commission who the search firm would be, which was the same one they used for Tom Barwin.
Yep.
And I'm not saying they're a bad search firm. It's just...
But if you've used one before, why not? I mean, it's like an auditor. You know, sometimes having fresh eyes has value.
Yeah, but it's the city commission's job.
That's right.
It's their job.
Yep.
And I'm frankly concerned that they're used to being handled. They're used to being surrendering their really important responsibilities. And I'm not saying you shouldn't delegate sometimes. Sometimes, absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But in this instance, they're not following the best practices. And there's been a culture in the city, which I think has been really concerning. Marlon, the city former city manager who resigned in October, within 3 months, also not a best practice, he became a lobbyist
right.
for the Chamber of Commerce. He's their director of government relations. So at the state level, it's actually prohibited for someone who works as an administrator or high-level type position. They have to wait 2 years before they lobby their old office,
mm-hmm.
right? They can't just flip and become a lobbyist. But that's what we've got right now with Mr. Brown. And Mr. Brown, in my view, politicized the city manager's office because he was clearly supportive of particular, I would say, the incumbents mm-hmm. who were running for city commission. And
well, he endorsed Mayor Alpert openly.
You're not supposed to. Again, there's an ethical guideline. So
that's
the ICMA has an ethics code. They have recommendations. And one of the recommendations is no political activity.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to, you know, the lobbying things from the state. I'm not sure if ICMA does that. But the state says that municipalities can adopt the same law. I
mm-hmm.
think we should.
Yep.
I think it's totally inappropriate for a former city manager to be turn around and lobby their old place of work. But then the other piece is they're not supposed to, they can advise on the qualities of a city manager. They can help provide a framework or, you know, a process for selecting their replacement, but they're not supposed to participate in the selection of their replacement. And that is exactly what's happening at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Alpert, endorsed, appointed Marlon Brown, the former city manager, to sit on a selection committee of five panelists who are going to interview finalists. We deserve a process that actually follows ethical guidelines.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, when I look at a city staff that's kind of hesitant to speak plainly, there's a reason for that,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, if they felt free, they would speak up, but they don't.
Right.
And if you have a former administrator who's left but really hasn't left,
mm-hmm.
it's not good for the new person coming in either.
Well,
you know?
And you have to wonder, I mean, he's lobbying in favor of business interests. Let's keep that in mind, too. He's not lobbying.
I'm good with business interests. I mean, we need
business
to do well.
But
however,
the way this has been set up with the chamber, they are enabling a violation of best practices and ethical guidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
a
problem, too.
Yeah, so really, it's not cool that he's interviewing candidates, okay?
No.
And people during the election season were calling Mr. Brown out, the city manager, when he was the city manager, about prohibiting city staff from attending a neighborhood meeting,
mm-hmm.
the Coalition of City Neighborhood Associations, with all the neighborhood associations gather, and they were having presentations. League of Women Voters has mm-hmm. presented to them before, NAACP. These are politically active groups. The group that was presenting was City PAC, which is, you know, a group of very well-recognized people
mm-hmm.
who take an active interest in the city, and they formed a political action committee. You all know I've written and I speak about dark money. City PAC is an actual committee that meets.
That's
it's
right.
It's not just a funding mechanism.
That's right.
They're actually.
And they're residents.
So he prohibited city staff from attending a City PAC presentation at CCNA. And you got to understand, city staff are always at CCNA meetings.
Always, yeah.
Every meeting, they're there.
Which is very valuable.
Yeah. And Mr. Brown prohibited it because City PAC was there. And City PAC was definitely critical of the incumbent candidates. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Brown, in writing, he was called out and said, look, you know, your ethical guidelines of your industry say that you can't do this. Mm-hmm. You can't be politically active. And he said in writing, then file a complaint against me.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he put that in writing. It's a public record. Interesting, the other day, Jim Lample gave public input at the Monday meeting. And Mr. Lample is involved in City PAC, mm-hmm. and he's a friend of mine. I know him for a long time. He's been active. And he called attention to the ICMA guidelines, the ethical code that a former city manager should not be participating in selecting their replacement, shouldn't be interviewing. And Mr. Lample reported to me he was followed. He went out of the commission room to take a phone call, a personal phone call. And Mr. Brown approached him and challenged him in, you know, an aggressive way to file a complaint.
Right.
To which, and here's the thing about this strategy of saying, go file a complaint against me. And Jim Lample said to him, I don't think we have standing. You're not a member.
That's right.
And he gave a colorful reply that meant no. Yes, he's not a member. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing about that. I mean, Mr. Brown isn't saying, oh, no, I'm not violating the mm-hmm. ethics code. He's not saying that.
That's right.
Because it's so clear that he is. He can't say that.
Can't make that argument, yeah.
No. What he's saying is you go file a complaint. Well, here's the deal. There's the International City County Managers Association, and they're the big industry group. They have the big ethics code. The Florida City County Managers Association follows the ICMA ethics code, mm-hmm. okay? And at one time, Mr. Brown was a member of ICMA, and when he was city manager, in the 2024 directory, 2025, Mr. Brown is in there for right. Florida FCCMA. He is part of that organization. They don't have an ethics, but he's not now. So when he left, he's no longer a member. He's not a member of either organization. The Florida group does not have an ethics complaint process. I've looked on their website. Huh, you can't find one. ICMA does, but it's only for members.
Right. Yep.
And I have to believe he's a smart man. Sure. That Marlon Brown knows that his challenge to citizens to file a complaint against him is completely hollow.
Yep.
Because there's no way for a citizen to actively file a complaint.
You can sense a little planned deceit there.
Well, and you know, Marlon, if you're listening, I am happy to have you on this show, and we can talk about this, and we can talk about why you think it's okay for you to interview candidates.
I would love to hear.
I would really like to know the explanation.
Yeah.
I would really like to know why you thought it was okay that you could show favoritism to candidates.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of people have written to the city and, you know, written to the city's HR department, and there's been a lot of one-way communication to the city asking for some explanation of this. Mm-hmm. There's been zero explanation. It's crickets. Nobody's said anything at all to the mm-hmm. citizens.
Right.
And you almost get the feeling that, you know, we're just going to wake up one morning and there will be a news story that says, oh, you have a new city manager.
So I want to ask you, if you're working in an environment where the boss is flouting their own ethical conduct code, right, mm-hmm. of the ICMA, are you going to stick your neck out and tell the city commission what you really think?
Right.
I don't think so.
Or if you're looking to potentially apply for the position and you see that the process is tainted already, would you want to go work for that city?
Right.
I mean, you might be the ideal person.
Yeah. If you knew the former city manager was now a lobbyist for the mm-hmm. chamber, is that a place you'd want to go? So with the, on
wow.
that thought.
Wow. We ran out of time.
I think we got to a lot. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Make it a great day. The day that I know more, until the day the earth I know.